From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1999 with the founding of Napster. The peer-to-peer file sharing service made it possible for people around the world to listen to MP3 files on their computers. It was convenient and accessible, didn't require a trip to a music store to pick up CDs. Not sure everyone in the music industry loved it. In fact, we know that things changed pretty quickly, but some college students, maybe even yours truly, was one of the first who were kind of checking out this new service there. And that's part of the reason why the number of album sales plummeted between 2003 and 2013. Now, from 1994 to 2003, there were 23 albums that sold more than 20 million copies. But in the following decade, there were only two. And what about the quality of MP3 files? The audio is compressed, and the difference between those and CD quality sound is significant, even if people like you and me are not regularly lining up, listening to them side by side. We may think that there's no change, but there has been a change. So how can we demand more from our audio? How is digital technology changing the audio engineering and producing industry? We'll talk about how recording music is not only an art, but a science and a business, just in time for Monday's Grammy Awards. Joining me for the hour is a Grammy Award-winning recording engineer. Stephen Restner is a musician, producer, instructor of audio and music engineering at the University of Rochester's Hagem School of Engineering and Applied Sciences. Nice to have you here. Steve, how are you?
Good, Evan. How are you?
Very good. Also joining us is Dave Ravello, an assistant professor of jazz studies and contemporary media. He's also going to be talking about the new Beale Institute for Film and Contemporary Media at the Eastman School of Music. Dave, nice to have you here as well.
Thank you for having me.
All right, well, let's talk a little Grammys because it's coming up Monday.
Yeah.
And I want to start with Steve because as a Grammy Award winner, that goes back to when for you?
I won in 2011.
2011. And can we listen to a little bit? Do you mind? Is that all right?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. So we're going to listen to the name of this as a non-French speaker. How do you pronounce this here, Steve?
It's Messiaen's Livre du Saint-Sacrement.
A lot of French professors are just cringing out there.
Yeah, I took Spanish, not French.
Livre du Saint-Sacrement. Let's listen a little bit. As we continue to listen underneath our voices here, Steve, give me a little bit of the background on how you got involved here, where this was done. Tell me the story.
Okay. I started off, I was a recording engineer at Juilliard for 5 years. And the organ professor, Paul Jacobs, approached me to do this recording for him. And I said, absolutely. He was a friend of mine, and I enjoyed recording organ pieces. And so he set it up, and we recorded at St. Mary's Cathedral on 45th Street in New York City. And we actually did it this week in 2009. So actually, I need to correct myself. I won in 2010 for the Grammy, not the 2011. We had to set up and tear down every night for 5 nights, starting recording at 10 p.m. and going until about 4 a.m. Every night using the cathedral.
Remarkable.
Yes.
And the Grammy, what was the category? It won for?
Best Solo Performance Without Orchestra.
Yeah, and clearly, your work was appreciated there. Did you envision where it would have end up? And I mean, did you think of this when you were working those late nights as
no.
a possible Grammy winner?
No. I knew it was going to be put out on Naxos Classical, which is a pretty major classical label, but I had no clue that it would be nominated for a Grammy or let alone win.
What was, for you, the mission then? I mean, this is a super ignorant question from someone who's not in your line of work, right?
Yeah.
But is it just to make the sound as crisp and clear as possible? Give me a sense for your mission.
For this particular piece, for organ, the organ is in conjunction with the building that it's housed in as part of the instrument. So you want to capture the instrument as well as the acoustics of the hall. So when we went to listen pre-production, I listened to the actual acoustics and the reverb time of the cathedral, and I wanted to capture that because it has this very long tail at St. Mary's. And so I mic'd the cathedral in an appropriate manner in order to get an accurate acoustical representation of the space.
Well, you obviously did a remarkable job of that.
And thank you.
So first of all, belated congratulations, 6 years on, as the Grammys come up on Monday. Mm-hmm. And Dave, why don't you tell me your story here? And John, we can drop out. I'm going to turn over to Dave Ravello, again, assistant professor of jazz studies and contemporary media. And Dave, you've co-produced a record up for a Grammy. And tell me a little bit about the work, some of the work that you've done.
I've been working with my friend Ryan Truesdell in New York City, who is the founder and leader of the Gil Evans Project. And the beginning of the story is that we've been friends a long time, and he, through Maria Schneider, an alumni of Eastman that many of you probably know, met the Gil Evans family and met Gil's wife. And she gave Ryan access to all of Gil's original manuscripts. And he went in there and found about 100 pieces of Gil's that were never recorded. And so he brought them up, and I put together a group of students at Eastman, and we read through a lot of this music and found that there was really some gems. So he made the first record, which is called Centennial, that came out during what would have been Gil's 100th birthday year. And that won a Grammy for an arrangement that Gil had done. And then we went into the Jazz Standard, where he holds residency every May, and we recorded this new album called Lines of Color. And I co-produced the album, and I sat in the club for, I think it was 14 sets over the course of 6 nights, and we recorded all of this music, and then we listened to all of what we had and figured out what was going to be the album. And so it's nominated for a Grammy.
When you're doing this work, are you thinking about the Grammys at all?
No, not at all.
I mean, Steve, you're kind of laughing. I mean, I assume you're not, but you know.
No, you're not. And the reason why I'm laughing is because I didn't know I was nominated for a Grammy. No one ever told me. And so I never went.
Oh, no.
I'm totally serious. I did not go.
You're sitting there going, I could have been there. Hello.
Yeah. The next morning after the Grammys that year, I woke up and I checked the list of winners. And so I was going through the list of winners and I saw my own name. And so I thought I was dreaming or something, and so I called my brother, who's a graphic designer, and I knew he'd be near a computer, and they said, Ryan, can you please check this out and make sure I'm not dreaming? And he said, yeah, you want a Grammy, you should probably call Mom and Dad.
But it's in the less sexy categories, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yes,
it's not the
exactly.
Pop music categories.
Yeah.
You're not bumping to break with this stuff.
Yes.
So. But they probably still should have told you.
Yeah, they should have told
you. I think you could. Well, at least Dave knows.
Yes, yeah.
Right.
Now, the difference, though, the contrast is pretty remarkable when you think about what you've produced, what you've helped engineer, and the sound quality compared to what most of us are listening to on a regular basis now. But I don't think most of us are thinking about that. Do you, Steve? I mean, I don't think we're thinking, oh, well, we used to listen to CDs, and now we're listening to... I guess we're listening to MP3s. What am I listening? If I'm on Spotify at home, I'm listening to what?
You're listening to a compressed AAC or FLAC file.
Okay, see.
So there's different types of files for compression and uncompression or uncompressed audio. Uncompressed audio is WAV file, and that's the only uncompressed version. Then there's lossy, which is MP3 AAC, and then there's lossless, which is MP4 or FLAC. I'm throwing a lot of different... acronyms out, but they all have different algorithms that process the audio.
And what's the problem with the quality?
The problem with the quality is that there's a loss. In order to compress anything, you need to get rid of information. And so it's this getting rid of information in which we lose frequency information, we lose musical information every time we compress something. And so the problem is that Spotify or YouTube or Pandora, they all have these compression algorithms that get rid of problems with the music or things inside the music. And we don't, we can't perceive that well, but it's lost.
So can we listen to some?
Yes,
I think just
absolutely.
For some examples, because let me just start with, we're going to hear is a cymbal crash here, but what you're going to hear is you're going to hear it twice,
yes.
Right? And the first is the better quality or no?
Yes, the first is the full resolution wave at 16 bits and 44.1 kilohertz
and
sample
then,
rate.
And then the second is?
And the second one is a 64 kilobit MP3 file.
All right, let's listen to two cymbal crashes. All right, so what's the difference to you? What's your ear hearing?
The ear is hearing there's some swirly things going on. So if you listen to the uncompressed cymbal, there's a full sound to the cymbal, especially in the higher range and the higher frequencies. When you start compressing audio, it filters out information that perceptually we aren't supposed to hear. Audio coding uses, compression uses a perceptual coding, but we lose that upper frequency range. So if you listen to the higher frequencies above 8,000 kilohertz, or 8,000 hertz, sorry, 8 kilohertz, there's real loss of quality. And so we say they have swirlies.
Can we do that one more time, John? Yeah. Let's do the cymbals one more time. And again, the first one that you'll hear is the good one.
Yes.
And the second one you'll hear is compressed.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, there's something vaguely, you call it swirlies, I guess.
Swirlies, yeah.
What do you hear, Dave?
I hear the same thing, yep. Yeah. It's definitely a huge difference. But I don't think we would know, though, when you're just listening, it's not something that necessarily occurs to you when you're just listening to music until you hear it like that.
But the problem is, right, because most of us are listening to compressed stuff these days, mm-hmm. and so we're getting a quality akin to the second in most of what we hear, but we don't have anything to compare it to, so we're kind of conditioning ourselves to listen to lesser quality, right? Is that part of the concern?
Yeah, and that's a lot of my students now that I have at U of R, they've come up in the age of compressed audio. They listen on MP3s, they listen to iPods, they listen to Spotify, and so they don't really know what good sound like anymore, and that's a worry for me and for people in the industry. My students, I will have them do a A-B test, kind of like what we did with the cymbal crash, where I'll play one version and then another version. I'll ask them which was the MP3, and usually they can't tell the difference.
Wow. Just what we heard with those two cymbal crashes?
Yes.
They would not have been able to tell?
Yeah, sometimes they prefer the sound of the MP3.
Because they're used to it.
Because they're used to it.
Conditioning.
Yes.
All right, so you have another example of... I've got it on the list as floating. What are we going to hear here?
Okay, sorry. My naming conventions. This is a band called William Shift, and it's a couple-second clip of a song called Floating. And we're going to hear a full audio file for about 10 seconds. It'll fade in and out by itself, and then we'll hear the compressed 64 kilobit version.
So again, the full, richer version first, and then the compressed version second. Let's listen. So for me, again, I'm the untrained guy in the panel, mm-hmm. right? So here's the difference I hear. With the cymbals, it was very stark. But for what I just heard there, it almost sounded like listening through a very light towel on the second time.
That's a good way to think of it.
A little less clear, a little more muffled, not as sharp, not as crisp.
Exactly. Yep, so that's exactly how you should describe it.
How would you have described it, Dave?
That's about exactly what I hear as well.
Yes, see, I passed my first test there. That's good to hear, but as someone in the business, though, now, mm-hmm. What's your concern? I mean, do you feel like a lot of these, and Dave, same question, do you feel like a lot of artists now are hearing the fullness of their sound not fully represented?
Yeah, I think most artists are frustrated that their music that they put long hours into creating and engineering and writing and performing is not being heard the way it should be heard. And that's an issue now with digital music. What about you, Dave? How do you feel?
Yeah, I think the same thing. I think that in especially the jazz world that I know, and like the Gil Evans record, the composers and bands like that are spending the money to try and basically get, and if it makes any sense, an analog kind of warm sound, but releasing it on CD. And I think we hope that people will listen on CD and not on compressed files, especially, at least that. And I know some bands
good
are,
luck
I know some bands are moving back towards yeah. actually putting out vinyl, mm-hmm. and it's kind of a really wow. it seems to be actually, I don't know,
vinyl's
you probably
cool vinyl
know.
Is very cool. It's having a, I would even say having a moment, but it's more than a moment. I mean, vinyl is, I think,
And it's,
in a really cool thing.
And it seems to be sort of the Brooklyn hipsters that have kind of bringing that back somehow, and it's catching on and getting to be wider.
But is that okay with you?
That's fine. I love vinyl. I grew up with that, and you could actually read the liner notes. It didn't come in some tiny little booklet. You know, I learned a lot of the history of jazz by reading the liner notes on the back of the records.
Absolutely. Yeah. What do you think, Steve?
That's a good point that you bring up, the resurgence of vinyl, and even now cassettes are coming back, which is also interesting.
I'm worried 8-tracks are next.
And then Wax Cylinder after that. I think this generation now is, so they've been used to digital downloads and albums being released digitally, which is fantastic for bands. It's cheaper, it's easier to get your music heard in a quicker way. Your fans don't have to go to a record store to buy the record, but they should go to the record store to buy the record. But the resurgence of vinyl is because these kids don't know what a physical medium feels like to hold that record in your hand and to have something that's tangible and you can take out the liner notes and read them. Digital files don't come with liner notes. They don't come with the information. And so that's why there's a rediscovery in vinyl. It's not necessarily a better sound, but that's another argument to be had another day.
Well, but that's just it's an interesting observation because there's definitely a resurgence in vinyl. And I'm going to turn the sound thing back to wine just because as a wine writer, I can turn anything back to wine. Imagine as a winemaker, every bottle of wine that came from your winery was mildly corked. We talk about corked wine, you know, being sort of undrinkable, smelling like mild newspapers. But TCA and cork can come in variations. And a wine can be very, very mildly corked to the point where it just sort of smells a little off. It's not bad. It tastes okay. But the person consuming it doesn't know. So if Steve made the wine, I think, you know, there's something that I just don't totally love about it. It's not bad. I just don't really want to drink it again. And you kind of get conditioned to that. We're kind of doing that with music and by choice here. We're not getting the fullness of what was created. And so what I'm wondering is with technology, again, let's go back to the ignorant guy in the room. Are we, can, if we're compressing, is technology ever going to allow us to not lose quality and still do it in a compressed or digital form?
Absolutely.
Yes?
Yes. If you think about a Netflix video, if you watch a HD video for 2 hours, that's gigabytes of information that's coming across your internet streaming. There's no reason why if we can do full 1080 HD video, there's no reason. A WAV file is minuscule compared to that. There's no reason why we can't have a full WAV streaming service that's high quality and pushing forward. Now, there is a streaming service out there that's like that, Tidal, that was founded by Jay-Z and backed by Beyonce and all those things, but it's failing because it's not convenient and you have to pay for it. It's not free, and that's the biggest thing right now.
What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, and I think, was it David Chesky or there was HD Tracks that never seemed to get off the ground, but that was the first one maybe half a dozen years ago that seemed, and I was encouraged, like, oh, this is going to be great, but somehow it never really
And there was really there's the Neil Young Pono player that Neil Young brought about, which is a high-quality iPod, essentially, that would play uncompressed and high-resolution audio files, and also that didn't catch on. There's always a convenience war in audio and in video technology in general, where the easiest format will win. You think about, like, VHS and Betamax in the early 80s, where VHS was cheaper, easier to handle, but Betamax had better video quality. Well, VHS won. It was cheaper. It was easier to
work with. It seems to be the pattern that we see with all the technology at some point or other. I always use that analogy, too, with VHS and beta as the convenient one, but it seems to be true always. I don't know.
We're talking about the future of music with a couple of guests who have experience through their own careers ending up at the Grammys, whether they knew it or not, nominated and winning. Stephen Restner is a musician, a producer, an instructor of audio and music engineering at the U of R's Hagem School of Engineering and Applied Sciences. And Dave Ravello is an assistant professor of jazz studies and contemporary media. And he's going to be talking in our second half hour about the new Beale Institute for Film and Contemporary Media at the Eastman School. Let me get a few of our listener comments in here. And by the way, if you want to call the program, you can do that. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. If you're in Rochester, I'm going to grab our first phone call. It's Mike in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Mike. Are you there, Mike? There it is.
Thanks for a fascinating program. Always enjoy it. A piece on sound quality that you're leaving out is the playback equipment. What am I listening on? Those earbuds are probably not the best in the world. And what is really, really required is the live performance and get rid of all those intermediaries. Just not quite that convenient. But thanks so much, not only for the program, but for all the pleasure and enjoyment you've given throughout the years.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate the phone call. All right. What do you think here, guys?
Oh, yeah. Playback medium is always an issue. The speakers that you have in your house, the headphones that you're wearing, or the turntable that you're using, or the MP3 player that you're using is always going to have an effect on the end quality of the music. But the reason why recorded music is quite popular over live music is that we can listen to the same song over and over and over again. Dave, your thoughts?
Well, as a composer, I think that the goal is always, I'm fortunate that I am teaching at Eastman also, that I hear live music every day of my life, which is an amazing thing. Yeah. And so for me, if I compose a piece or I'm listening to a recording, I'm wanting it, of course, we want it to sound like in my living room, I want it to sound like the orchestra is sitting in there. So I think that's always what we're hoping to somehow achieve.
All right, Dave, well, now I'm going to ask you to do something that you probably don't want to do, but I want you to speak for the greats here. Last hour, we talked to Ward Stair, the RPO's music director, about their upcoming season. And a lot of what they're doing, of course, is modern music. A lot of it harkens back to the classics. I think, you know, if Beethoven could see Spotify, he'd probably think everyone gets a chance to listen whenever they want. But if he understood the compression quality, would he be in favor or against it?
Well, I'm not prepared for that
question.
Yes,
you are. Yes, you are. You have to speak for Beethoven.
Wow. I think, or speaking kind of how I would think how I think as a composer.
Sure, absolutely.
I would rather that they didn't hear it compressed, personally.
Hearing it at all? So you're going to say don't hear it?
I know.
That's tough.
It is a tough thing, but for me, just personally, I'd rather that they didn't hear it than to hear it in a way that is not what the image in my mind's ear is of that music.
All right,
because they're not really hearing they're not really hearing my piece then in a certain way. I know it's a subtle kind of, but you're not hearing all the frequencies of if I as a composer decide that I'm going to put an instrument in a particular range, that's a certain frequency, and if that ends up getting compressed, you're not really hearing what I conceived.
And your answer is just another signal to people like me that we do need to be more aware of the quality of what we're consuming.
Yeah.
And that ease of use has had some consequences. Here are some comments that have come in online. Eric writes to us, I buy almost everything on CD, and my favorite album is on vinyl as well. As an engineer and musician, I need the quality. He said that might be a tough test going out on AM and especially streaming as I'm hearing it. But he says, I'm a big proponent of high-quality audio. Most people are listening through terrible speakers and earbuds. That's Eric. Nick writes to us, I'm listening to the show on vintage hi-fi sound quality. And he sends a picture, and again, it's just vintage, I guess, here, right? what is this here?
Yeah, Steve? It looks like he's got an old Harman Kardon amp there.
Is that good stuff?
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Is it so sad, Nick, that I don't know? I mean, I should know, and that's just another illustration of what the Philistines like me are willing to tolerate when it comes to sound quality. Misty writes, 99% of the music I purchase is on CDs. I like having the physical copy, the liner notes, etc. And she didn't even mention quality, but just some of those other extras that we don't get when we just grab something off Spotify.
Exactly.
So that kind of gives you a sense for it. Oh, and I'm sorry, one more here. Alex just wanted to say, can you show us more examples of quality? I guess we can. Can we go down through the different wave?
Yes,
the
we
files
can.
There? Okay, so because what Steven sent as well, again, I'm going to need you to help me with
this.
That's
fine.
Because, John, we're going to start with 256, go to 128 and 64. So what are we going to hear first here?
So what we're going to hear is the actual what is subtracted, what is lost in the information. So if you're listening at home with your stereo, the first one might be a little hard to hear. It'll get worse as we get going. So it's going to be the wave file subtracted from a 256 kilobytes per second MP3. And so this is all the information that's taken out that we lose.
Okay, so this is compressed, but then we're going to hear something that's more compressed?
No.
Okay.
This is just the data that is lost.
Oh, this is the data that's lost. Okay.
This is the data that's lost.
All right, so let's listen to the first one. Go ahead. This is fascinating because what you're saying is that is like if I bring a piece of meat home and I cut the fat off a steak,
yep.
or if I just cut the middle portion out of a steak, that's the part that was cut out.
Yes, exactly.
That the person yeah. eating it doesn't know was ever there.
Yeah, and most of the listeners at home probably just heard kind of static.
Yeah.
It'll get worse, and you'll start to hear the leads. So this is the music that we heard earlier by William Shift, the song Floating Heads. It will get worse, and we'll start to hear the lyrics and the vocals come through.
So -128 just means...
-128 is the next step down.
Okay, let's listen. And again, obviously a little more, a little static, but a little more there. Yep.
Yep, and now we're going to do 64 kilobits per second.
I don't want to eat my steak without the middle.
Need a little bit of gristle in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you guys, when you're hearing compressed files, is it hard for you not in your own minds to think about what's lost, or have you also become more conditioned to it, Dave?
I think for me, I don't know if it's conditioned, but accepting, because sometimes I don't have a choice. If I had a choice, obviously I would go without. I would not want to have that, but. It is convenient, and I guess we're all on some level guilty of the convenience of, well, I can just grab this and hear this. And so I think I don't want to think about it. I guess if I thought about it, I would even notice more what I wasn't getting, and then it would kind of maybe get in the way somehow of even enjoying what it is that I can access.
Okay. Steven?
Yeah, it's hard for me to turn that off now. After years of just working in the audio industry, when I hear an MP3, I hear an MP3. Well, whether I comment on it, that's up to who I'm hanging out with or whether I'm writing notes to myself. Generally, I just take it with a grain of salt and I say, okay, I'm going to enjoy this as music or enjoy the engineering of it. I won't think too much that I'm losing information.
Okay. Question from a listener. How do people get good speakers? Do they need to be a newer technology? And in general, how much do you need to spend? And how do you know what's good and bad?
Listening back to playback devices such as headphones and speakers is totally up to you. It's a totally qualitative and just, you know, it's your own feelings on the speakers. There's really no right or wrong. There's no price point I can point you to that will get you good sound. It's just you have to go and listen for yourself and bring a CD that you know really well and listen to a bunch of different speakers.
Dave?
I would just say that I think trusting a good online website maybe that talks about, that is engineers talking about audio equipment, and kind of still I think you'd need to go to the store with a favorite CD or recording or LP and actually try it on different, something you really know well, and listen to that on different equipment and see what really makes the sound for you as real and live as possible.
An email from Mandy just says, okay, Evan, but how do we fix this? I don't want to listen to bad-sounding music either. So if you missed that earlier, so let's just try to address that. What's going on now? Steve, I'll start with you.
What's going on now? You have to demand more. You have to go out and buy the CDs, or we have to start demanding as a world to enjoy our music better. So that Spotify makes their stream quality as high quality as possible, that Pandora does the same thing, that YouTube does the same thing. Again, if Netflix can stream HD video online very easily and very quickly to your home, a full-size WAV file is a fraction of that size.
Okay. Agree, Dave?
Absolutely. I think that, and if it means that we have to pay, I mean, we have to pay. We should be paying for art anyways. That's yes. a different day to talk about all of that.
I think that's tied up in this. I think yeah. Because Napster was one of the first, if I remember, mm-hmm. that convinced the world that all content should be free. I have to pay for this? People were offended. And now you look at internet content, news websites, books, whatever it is, people want free content.
Right.
And that domino started to fall with Napster, and it was music. Mm-hmm. And we started to think free is better than highest quality sound. And what you're advocating is being willing to pay a little.
Yeah.
Because number one, you're going to pay for better quality. And number two, benefits the artist, so we should be caring about.
Right. And also, I think that, you know, if it was from the beginning with Napster's example, if you had to pay no matter what, then nobody's going to pick the lesser quality. If it cost the same, we would never. But because one's free and one costs, and we got used to the free, I think that's where we are right now, trying to wrestle with that. The industry, the artists, everybody is fighting to try and find just a fairness. Nobody's looking to, you know, get rich, but just to get paid for their work.
I know, and I fear that a 3-day work week is more likely than people being willing to pay for things they think should be free.
Yeah.
You know,
Right.
But maybe I shouldn't be so pessimistic, because when you start to hear these differences, mm-hmm. I think then people will say, "Wow, I didn't necessarily know what I was losing."
Yes.
So you lose more, better for the artists. It's a good message. Let's get a short break in and come back with our guest. Stephen Restner is a producer, instructor of audio and music engineering at the University of Rochester. Dave Ravello here from the Eastman School. And we're talking about the future of sound and quality. They can't fix everything, but they are giving us some good insight into what we are listening. And we're going to talk more about that when we come back after this short break right here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, Matt Lewis joins me in the first hour. He's the author of the new book, Too Dumb to Fail, How the GOP Betrayed the Reagan Revolution to Win Elections and How It Can Reclaim Its Conservative Roots. He says he wants the GOP to regain its intellectual status. Then, second hour, a new Black Theater Festival is coming. We'll preview that and more. It's all Monday on Connections.
This is WXXI AM Rochester, WRUR FM and HD Rochester, WEOS FM and HD Geneva, and WXXI FM HD2 Rochester.
John Oliver's show Last Week Tonight will go far for a joke.
We created a church.
What was it called?
It was called Our Lady of Perpetual Exemption.
Brothers and sisters, welcome to Our Lady of Perpetual Exemption. I am your mega reverend, thank you, brothers and sisters, your mega reverend and CEO, John Oliver. And
John Oliver on the truth behind his comedy on the next All Things Considered from NPR News.
And all the news from your NPR news station at 4 o'clock this afternoon.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and just a steady stream, you see what I did there, of listener comments about just questions on this. So I could probably just do questions for the entire hour on do you like this speaker or that. Some of what Stephen just said was you've got to try it out yourself. But I'll get Amy's question in from Twitter. Amy says, could you ask your guests what headphones and what speakers they specifically are using for personal use or what brands they do prefer? So can you answer it, Stephen?
Yeah, I can answer it. I'm not being endorsed by any of these headphones.
There
speakers.
You go. Okay.
You know,
yeah.
I got to lay that out. I use a set of Sonys that I've had for 15 years that I love. The model number is MDR7506s. They're fantastic, but they're a little more revealing. They're not necessarily for pleasure listening, but they're a fantastic headphone manufacturers such as AKG, Audio Technica, Grado are all fantastic as well. I'd stay away from the Beats stuff personally. They're very cheap and they're very expensive, but they're cheaply made and they don't sound very good.
Dave.
Actually, it might seem odd that I don't really listen much other than live music. And because of much of my life is filled with composing, I'm hearing my own piece in my head all the time. And so I've obviously done a lot of listening when I was younger. And not that I don't, but I try to hear live music. If I feel like I need to hear music, I'll go hear an orchestra. And I'm at Eastman, and there's 800 concerts a year or something there that are all free. So I can just stick my head into any of the concert halls or a rehearsal. And so unless it's a specific piece that I need to listen to for a particular reason, or then I'm mostly hearing the music in my head. And if I'm composing, then I don't really want the influence necessarily of other music. So I don't really have a good answer for what kind.
No, it's fair. I mean, I remember having conversations with my colleague down the hall, Mona Segatola Salami, about her love of home concerts. And and I'm sure she's not the only one down at Classical 91.5 who feels that way because of just that intimacy and quality of sound right there. I mean, do you love the home concert setting, whatever it is, whether it's classical or other genres?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. And Justin writes and says, is vinyl qualitatively better sound quality or just preferred for aesthetics, nostalgia, liner notes. I think, Stephen, you were saying vinyl is not necessarily better qualitatively. Is
that not right? Necessarily. It has a lower dynamic range than a CD. CD is actually the best sound quality you can get. People will argue analog versus digital their whole life, and I've argued this point many, many times, but CD is actually the best quality you can get in regards to frequency range and dynamic range. Dynamic range is the softest sound to the loudest sound, and because of vinyl's inherent physicality of it, there's a needle and there's scratchiness, which we all love, you know, the noise that a record makes, but that raises the noise floor, and that, therefore you cannot have as much loud as you can with a CD.
Okay. I want to ask Dave, if I could, just about, you know, working with, and well, really both of you, when you work with people who are recording music, you are not only looking to create and help create and help lead to the best possible sound, but as Dave was saying during our brief break, there is a psychology involved. Number one, you may be working with egos. You may be, you know, working with these, working with this desire to express the music in a certain way. And it wasn't that long ago, and maybe still today, bands, recording artists are putting out records, albums, whatever, in a very intentional order. You know, certainly you go throughout the 1970s and 80s, they're telling certain stories with that. It's not always just random, even though now on most of our playlists, people just hit a random button. And does it drive you crazy, Dave, that things are just pulled straight out of context like that?
It absolutely drives me crazy. I just can't.
It physically hurts you that people are listening.
I just can't. I can't do that. Yeah, I grew up with LPs and made the transition to 8-track, unfortunately, as we all did. But I feel that I know for my own record and working on the Gil Evans record, and everybody that I know that makes albums, we spend a lot of time thinking about the tempo, this tempo next to this tempo, this feel next to this feel. Does it sound too much the same? Even the keys, if it's a particular. So there's a lot of thought and many, many hours that goes into thinking through, well, where should this piece be? And should I put the slow piece earlier? Or should it be later? And I think that that's what happened when we had physical media. I mean, it had to be in an order, and it was never a random order. And now I think we've also kind of, as we're talking about, used to lesser quality, we've also gotten used to this randomness that we're not even hearing the same artist from the same recording. So the quality levels that we're even experiencing are also random. Mm-hmm. And so it's all over the place. And it's kind of, my brain needs to be able to kind of, if I'm listening to this, I need to be in that world. And if I'm just darting all over the place, I feel like I might need medicine for that or something.
And I don't mean to preach, by the way, because I'm as guilty as anybody of what Dave is describing. But that must, in some level, take away our ability to absorb context, meaning, sometimes emotion, from music that's created. It just becomes this smorgasbord of quick-hitting stuff of, do I like it? Does it sound easy and simple? And then we're on to the next thing, as opposed to maybe sitting and absorbing a little more. Yeah?
Right, absolutely. And plus, we have the skip button, and so which you don't have when you hear a live orchestra. If you're not liking it, you know, unless you're going to leave and miss the rest,
this
you can't just...
a little not my taste, so,
just
yeah.
Hit the button and the orchestra switches. And I think if we would think about it, if we were to watch something, a movie, and a movie was jumping around the way that the music does when we listen to it on random mode, we would have no idea what that film was about. But yet somehow we, again, accept it musically. But I'm laying out a concept. I want you to have an experience when you listen to my recording from beginning to end, hopefully. You have some kind of experience, and I hope that that is the same experience kind of that I had in composing that music for you then to listen to. And if you do it in pieces and parts, you're not getting my whole artistic vision.
Yeah. All right, so let me ask about the future of an industry where we're seeing more compression, ease of use, all those things we've been talking about. Does that mean there's less demand for quality engineers, quality people in production? And Steve, I know you've said, you know, engineers forget to use their ears when they record sometimes. And I wonder, is this transition affecting quality of engineering? What do you think?
I don't think so. I think engineers, people that want to work in audio and audio engineering, really take time to learn what stuff should sound like and take time to learn the basics of audio engineering. So one of the courses I teach at University of Rochester is a course in critical listening. Now, this course doesn't do musical training. There's no interval training. There's no chord training. This is frequency band training. And so I teach the students how to discern the difference between a Gibson Les Paul versus a Fender Stratocaster, and whether that's going through a Vox AC30 amp or a Fender Twin, whether it's on the bridge pickup versus the neck pickup. So these are the kind of things that I'm trying to teach my students and create engineers that can discern a difference and actually care about the audio quality.
And that hasn't changed?
No.
Okay. And so when it comes to this future, this sort of uncertain future, are we going to sort of live with compression and a little loss of quality, et cetera? There's still demand? Has the demand for people in this field changed at all?
I don't think so. I honestly don't think so.
Okay. Dave, what do you think?
No, I think and I think it's fantastic that people like Steve are teaching this, because if you think we go back not too far, people learned it kind of by doing it, and there wasn't all of this amazing information to be able to really, really get the best sound out of whatever environment you're in. So I think the education part of this is really exciting.
Well, you know, as long as smartphones exist, and I think they're going to exist in perpetuity now. You know, when the sun melts down, it'll take the rest of our smartphones with it. But that's part of our life, and that's how a lot of people listen to music now, too.
That's very true.
And so
I would say most people listen to music very passively. They listen to it while they're working. They listen to it while they're at the gym or while they're running around town. But for the few that actually do actively listen, you know, I try to teach them to really discern between good audio and bad audio. For the rest of the populace that decides to just listen to music while they're at the gym, that's great. Get you pumped up, go about your day. But, you know, take a few minutes and think like, okay, well, if I connect to the wireless at my gym, can I get better audio quality than if I'm listening, downloading from the wireless tower? Because if you're connected through Wi-Fi, you might be accessible to better quality audio.
Or maybe even, you know, just at least accepting, knowing the difference, the more educated the general public gets, and again, I'm among them who probably couldn't have told much of a difference before the hour began. And I'm appreciating this conversation because I like to know the difference. So educating the public about what you're losing, knowing that we're not all going to give up Spotify and YouTube listening and all of that stuff, but appreciating the difference and occasionally maybe slowing down a little. You know, we do seem to have shorter attention spans these days. And I bet you people like Dave would be thrilled if occasionally we'd say, you know what I'm going to do for half an hour? I'm going to sit and I'm going to just relax and enjoy music. And maybe off a CD, maybe in a live setting, but I'm not going to be doing eight things at once. I'm not going to, just for now, I'm going to take in the quality and the intention of it. Doesn't have to be all the time, but sometimes, yeah?
Right. Oh, absolutely. And we're all so busy that we can't do it all the time, unfortunately.
Right.
But just making a little bit of time to experience that, because it's a different experience when you're focused only on the music. I mean, if it was even just 10 minutes of a 10-minute piece where you really get yourself into what that sonic world is, I think that it just, we need that as people, and I think we kind of forget that we need that. And with my band playing live, it's amazing that the people that are affected by just hearing the sound and the actual airwaves being moved by sound coming out of live instruments. And I get that comment all the time from people that like, oh, I really need to come out and hear live music. I never go hear live music. And it does something physically to us that I'm sure it's been studied, but I'm not a guy who has followed all of that. But I know that we do need that, and we forget that.
All right. Well, there are a growing set of opportunities in music, even on the local scene, even through the University of Rochester, through the Eastman School, because as music and technology change, we've seen more people creating music, engineering music, producing music for games, for scores, for films, for television. And I want Dave to tell us a little bit about what the Jeff Beal Institute is and how it's going.
The Jeff Beal Institute, Jeff and Joan Beal were students here in the time of Rayburn Wright, when Rayburn Wright led the jazz department and contemporary media at Eastman School of Music. And Jeff and Joan both, but Jeff has gone on to write music for a lot of things that we all know, like Ugly Betty. He did the score for the Jackson Pollock film.
All you got to say, man, is House of Cards.
I was getting there.
Oh, I see. You're building it up. I thought, oh, man, it's coming back. We're like a few weeks away, and all I'm thinking about is I get Jeff Beal's music back every night.
Yeah.
And so it's really an exciting time at Eastman with all of this. And of course, Jeff has been hugely successful, but it is the music that he's so passionate about. And Evan, you had mentioned, I think, before we started maybe even, that one of his strong beliefs is that the music for film that we often think, well, we don't even necessarily hear it. And in a way, if you don't hear the music in a film, it's doing the job that it's supposed to do. We shouldn't really be aware of that music for the most part. But the fact that the film music that we know now is really today's classical music is, I'm paraphrasing his words. But he feels that that music should occupy the stage in a concert hall the same way that Beethoven does. And that the music is that high quality now, and that it's compositions, and it's not just background material. So last spring we had Jeff at Eastman for about a week-long residency that culminated in not a medley, I don't know what you would call it, but he showed clips from House of Cards and worked his music in and conducted the orchestra to a full audience in Kodak Hall. And at that time, we were talking about a lot of different things, and he really saw that we're moving much more in that direction at Eastman, and I'm working actually on a new degree that is called Contemporary Media Film Composition. And so Jeff and Joan decided to donate money to Eastman, and that meant the launch of the Beale Institute. So we're just starting to kind of figure out exactly what that's going to do, but we definitely know it's about film and video game music and music that is where students have the opportunity to make a living now, and training them to go out for their future and know all of this technology and how to use it to make artistic music, as opposed to knowing how to use it in your basement and just not really making music that people want to hear.
What I loved about the conversation I had with Jeff Beale on this program when he was here in town, he stopped in, and I am a big House of Cards fan. But to your point, Dave, when you watch the actual episodes, during the episodes, you almost never notice the music unless you are intentionally looking for it, and then you go back and you go, boy, that is perfect. But you do notice the theme, because that's just the theme in the opening credits, and it's already iconic.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff just understands. He created a great theme that we all sort of know and love now. But during the actual episodes, and he was describing the process, he watched the episodes, and then he decides, how do I want to create? What do I want here? And sometimes it's just a lone soprano in the background coming in at this moment, this really important moment. And sometimes it's something a little lighter. But he's so good at figuring that out. So a student who goes to the Institute, the Beale Institute, would be moving into create music, to get into the production side. What kind of student goes into the Beale Institute?
Well, it'll be all of those things, because as time has gone on, we as composers and musicians have to be able to wear a lot of different hats. So you never know what the job is going to entail. But the goal, and that was Ray Wright's goal at the time, was to have the students come out of school being able to, I always say that if the phone rang, you could pick it up and say yes before the question was even asked of, can you do, yes, and can, yes, and can you, yes. And so that's where that's where I'm aiming to be, is that, so all of those things.
Let me grab one more phone call. This is Roland in Rochester. Go ahead, Roland.
Yes, hi. I build all my own stereo equipment. I bi-amp, tri-amped, crossover networks and everything. I go to the jazz festival, and now I do sound level measurements and noise measurements and hearing conservation programs. Why do they play it so loud? I mean, we're talking continuous sound levels of 100 decibels on Gibbs Street, and people are standing right in front of the speakers. What is going on?
Well, that's what is given to the front of house engineer, the engineer that's standing out there doing the live sound. If they're instructed to have 100 decibel level at front of house, that's what they're going to give you. And usually in a louder rock concert, especially outdoors, it's going to be 120. 120 decibels is your threshold of pain. So I highly recommend everyone start wearing hearing protection. You can get fitted hearing protection at any acoustician in town. They will fit your ear with either 10, 15, or 25 decibel pads that will bring everything down but keep the frequency band the way it should be. And you'll hear fine, but it'll just be at a lower volume. So I highly recommend that, because front of house engineers are given a rider telling them how loud to be, and that's how loud they're going to be.
All right, a couple more quick comments. Mia emails and says, isn't the creation of playlists and removing songs from their album context a kind of curation and interpretation of the artist's albums, a way of getting the most personally out of an art piece? That's Mia's question. Dave?
Well, I'm not quite sure how to answer that. I understand what you're asking, and yes, in a certain way, that's, I guess, giving the listener a little bit of creative input or decision-making, and... And I suppose that I maybe have been guilty of that myself at certain points, but I feel like the overall picture of the artist and what they've kind of created and want you to experience, in a certain way, I feel like it would be strong to say that, you know, to alter a painting of Picasso or something, because we wouldn't do that. And so maybe that's not, we're not talking on the same level, but I feel like... For me as a composer, I would not want that to happen. I want you to have my total experience. Even if you don't like parts of it, I'd still want you to hear what my vision was.
But at the very least, at least Mia's a little more thoughtful about the process.
And that's, absolutely.
That's interesting. Yes. I appreciate that, Mia. We're just about out of time. Stephen, I know you've done a local TED Talk. Have you done a TEDx Talk? Yeah?
Yes, I did in 2014.
So is that online?
It is online.
Because I think for people, we have a lot of interest. People still asking questions, can't even get into all the comments, but they want to see more. They dig it up and find it?
Yeah, they can find it on YouTube or on TEDxFlowerCity.com.
TEDx Flower City, and Steve's name is... Ressner. But it is spelled R-O-E-S-S-N-E-R, and that's from 2014, TEDx Flower City.
Yes.
So I know you could talk about this for hours, and I hope you guys will come back and keep us updated on where the industry is going, because there's a lot of interesting things happening, and very clearly a lot of our listeners are concerned about quality. So thank you, Steve, for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
Thank you.
And Dave, thank you, and best of luck with the Institute. A lot of fun things happening there. Our thanks to the engineer of this broadcast, always doing a great job on the sound, is John Endres. Thank you, John. Megan Mack is the producer of Connections, Kate Cowie Haskell and Mariel Brinkerhoff, the interns, and I'm your host, Evan Dawson, and I will talk with you Monday on Connections.